Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Normally, this time of year, The Exchange would bring you our summer movie show. But this year, film production and release schedules have been upended by the pandemic. And while those who make movies have some flexibility, shifting release from cinemas to streaming services, production of new films has been complicated. At the same time, the industry faces rising demand to better reflect the stories of a diverse America. Meanwhile, brick-and-mortar theaters are struggling with how to open, whether to do so, and what to show if they do decide to welcome back the public. Today in The Exchange, what's next for the movie industry? Let's hear from you. What films have caught your attention this summer? And how do you feel about watching a movie in a theater? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call. It's 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Angie Lane, Executive Director of Red River Theaters, an independent movie theater in Concord, Amy Diaz, editor and movie reviewer at the Hippo Press, and Linda Holmes, host of Pop Culture Happy Hour, a podcast from NPR. Welcome to everybody. And Angie, let's start with you. Many Americans have been doing a lot of TV watching, a lot of movie watching during the shutdown this spring. That continues, unfortunately, this summer. What's the role of film, Angie, at this time of widespread societal anxiety and, frankly, fatigue?
Oh, gosh. Good question. I mean, I know, you know, anecdotally, just speaking to people in our community, you know, at this point, people are looking to be either distracted, you know, people are watching things that might have been on screen or on television years ago because there's a comfort level there. But also with everything that is happening around us, you know, with Black Lives Matter, I mean, a lot of people are accessing, you know, films and TV shows that, you know, are allowing them to, you know, for our community, educate themselves, you know, walk in other people's experiences. You know, there's some great documentaries. I think people in New Hampshire are really looking at, you know, how to teach themselves or be in this moment, and they are using film and television to do so. So there's like a wide variety of ways people are using film right now during this crazy time.
So sort of enlightenment watching, Angie, but comfort watching, a mix of the two of those.
I think so. I know that, I mean, personally, that's where I'm at.
Well, Linda, how about you? What's the role of film, you know, at this really difficult time right now? I mean, let's just call it what it is. Things are not easy. How does film, Linda, help?
Well, you know, for me, I think it's been important to kind of adjust my approach as things go on. Because I think originally when I thought maybe this was going to be a matter of, you know, a month or two, I was thinking more in terms of just passing the time. And film was good for that. Old films that I love. And at that time, a kind of a backup of things that were already completed and scheduled and coming to Netflix or whatever. I think as it's continued and as I've started to adjust to the idea that I may be in this position for a while, for me, it is important to continue to discover things. And from time to time, there are still things that are completed that are showing up on streaming services, on Netflix or whatever. But it's also been a really important time for me to be mindful of continuing to make discoveries. So I have been doing a lot of, for example, you know, prowling my streaming services that I have for existing films, particularly for some reason documentaries. I kind of move through phases. So for me, I have to balance. I can't just pass time because of the length of this.
So lesser known films you've been discovering, Linda, because as you're sort of alluding to, there may be less new stuff in the pipeline. Is that what you find yourself doing?
It is what I'm doing. And I think, you know, the upside of it is we've been talking for years, particularly television critics, about the fact that there's just way too much stuff. And it's not that there's way too much. It's not that there's way too much bad stuff. It's that there's way too much pretty good stuff for anybody to possibly be watching. So those things exist, right? Whether they're films or television, and especially now, but always, that line can be somewhat blurred as to what even qualifies as television, what qualifies as film. But yeah, you know, it is a good time to say, well, if there is an upside to this absurd glut of content, it's that there is a lot of, no matter who you are, there is a lot of good stuff that you haven't seen, not just kind of forgettable stuff. So I am making an effort to both explore those things and also kind of highlight and elevate those things so that other people can find them too. That's what I think my job is right now.
Amy, what are your thoughts on all this? The role of film at this time and sort of where people are at in terms of what they choose to watch.
Well, I completely agree with the there is a lot out there, because I kind of find myself now, I feel like I'm almost seeing more movies every week than I did before. Before I was very focused on kind of the big releases each week in theaters. And now I'm every week it feels like, oh, there's all these things that have come out. And I try to pick the things that I think will be the most interesting to people. Sometimes I try to pick, you know, here's the movie you've maybe heard a lot about that you will have to pay a lot for, and is it worth it? Last weekend I felt like it almost felt like regular summer. There was a big blockbuster that came out, right? Hamilton came out on Friday, and I think everyone saw it. And that was really kind of fun to like do a thing with everybody again. you know, I kind of felt like, oh, we're all doing a thing this weekend together. So, you know, there is so much to go see. I do miss, you know, all the things that usually come with summer. I love a big popcorn movie. And, but, you know, and I do think I'm one of the people that also is like, okay, I've seen this really great documentary. Now, what is something fun and maybe a little dumb that I can watch?
So you said there is lots to go see, Amy, but are you going anywhere or are you parking yourself on the couch?
Oh, this is definitely couch. Like, for example, this Friday, there are a bunch of what I consider kind of, you know, big movies, movies that are sort of peeking out, that are coming out. A movie that's sort of like a Groundhog Day kind of comedy called Palm Springs is going to be on Hulu. You mentioned Greyhound, a World War II movie, which is going to be on Apple TV. The Old Guard, which is kind of a comic book action movie on Netflix. And then a movie I've been waiting for a while called First Cow. So this was a movie, I think it got a little bit of a theatrical release before things shut down. And now it's going to be available for watching at home. So I feel like all of a sudden, oh my goodness, I've got four big movies to watch. And my list of things I want to see keeps growing.
Oh, so Palm Springs, Amy, you said it's like Groundhog Day. I had not heard of that one. And the reason that's interesting to me is, you know, literally 2 weeks into the pandemic, when it looked like we were going to be here for a while, I made everybody sit down and watch Groundhog Day because every day kind of feels the same. So yeah. Tell me a little bit more about Palm Springs, Amy.
Well, so I've only seen the trailer. It stars Andy Samberg, and I guess he and a couple of other people are at a wedding, and they just sort of get trapped at a wedding in Palm Springs, and they get trapped in that one day and keep living it over. And like, what do you do now once you realize you're stuck in this day? And, you know, it looks promising and it's exciting. You know, I'm looking forward to it. And again, I think it's Friday on Hulu. And it's just kind of neat to still have that film schedule of new releases.
So in addition to the pandemic, as you all touched on, we are in the midst of a national discussion about systemic racism in this country. And Angie, to you first, how do you see the filmmaking industry taking on this moment as much as they can, given the restrictions of the pandemic, in terms of how Black and other non-white Americans are portrayed or whose stories get told? How good a job do you think they are doing, Angie, in terms of, you know, grabbing onto this national conversation?
I mean, I think I would first just say that they can do better. I mean, I think the film industry in general, for people who are not were not white, the characters that were available to be played, the narratives, whose story was always really limited. And I think I'm hoping that this is an opportunity to really expand that. You know, we showed Moonlight at Red River Theaters. And I remember it was kind of a revelation because it was, you know, characters that I felt had not been seen on the screen, especially here in New Hampshire. And, you know, they're Black characters, you know, gay characters. And it was beautiful. And I thought to myself, wow, is this a turning point? Because a lot of times, you know, when there is a Black character, they're probably not the main character, or if they are, there's a certain role that they're cast in, you know, maybe, you know how it is, it's always a sidekick. You know, if it's an Asian person, they might be, you know, with the accents, and it's a like hilarious, you know, sidekick. So, I mean, film is so powerful, and it's, you know, reflects our own identity, how we believe we are in the world, and help audiences kind of, you know, especially young audiences, kind of build the idea of who they are. So film has, you know, come a long way, but there's still a lot of room for an array of a spectrum of characters who played, because I think for a long time, there's, you know, been these just, you know, five types of characters for an Asian, you know, actor, five types of character, or even smaller, let's be real, like for Black actors. So I think I'm hoping that this will really open up to wider audiences, to the mainstream, because, you know, indie films might have been piercing that, you know, that threshold. But I think, you know, for mainstream films, there's a lot of room to grow in that aspect.
Yeah, that you know, sidekick, the sort of humorous Black or Asian sidekick to the main, usually white male character, Angie, does seem a little overused, a little tired at this point. And Angie, you've been talking about your experience as an Asian American trying to expand Red River's community beyond its mostly older, white, affluent audiences. What are you thinking about, Angie, or what examples have you heard from other independent movie theaters around the country toward that goal?
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about how to raise those voices and narratives. And, you know, I use the example, I grew up here, I'm Korean American. You know, some of the first Asian people that I recognized through media were, you know, either like the really nerdy, smart person, or like the funny, hilarious foreign exchange student. So that really, that was the first, my first access to what an Asian identity in America was. And as you can imagine, that was really, really hard and narrow. So I feel like, you know, indie cinemas, especially, and, you know, we're independent, you know, we're not part of a giant chain. We have a little more autonomy to direct our programming. And, you know, at Red River, we do a lot of, you know, talkbacks, panel discussions, you know, trying to engage audiences in those harder conversations. By no means do we feel that we are experts. And, you know, really looking at our community, yeah, we're a majority white community, but there are people of color here in New Hampshire. And, you know, we always try to say we're the community theater, but we want to make sure we are the entire community theater. And I think, you know, we really pride ourselves on being a space for people to have those conversations. I think we can do a lot more, but it's really about, you know, trying to find the product that's out there to, and finding the people that can really help, you know, guide those conversations. Because, you know, just showing, you know, Beale Street Could Talk versus Green Book and having the conversation and what are those differences between these films and why we should be breaking it down, and who is telling the story. Like, those are really important conversations. And I think that indie cinemas are positioned in a much more, you know, we have a much easier role than a big box chain theater that, you know, just is part of the movie system and that is just getting product and not really having a say in it. You know, they're just getting, you know, delivered to them. We have a little more autonomy, and I think that we need to take that role and use it.
So, Linda, what do you think about this? You know, again, as much as movie producers can create any new content right now, How do you see them either working on this issue of expanding the stories, expanding the characters to reflect a more diverse America, either working on those stories or at least talking about it, you know, once they can create new stories? Linda, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think the record of Hollywood on this kind of stuff is dismal, and I think has remained dismal. I think you can point to individual achievements. I think, you know, obviously I absolutely agree there are achievements like Moonlight and the rise of specific directors who have absolutely been able to to kind of gather power behind their own work. But at the same time, I think overall, the numbers have been quite stubborn, especially about behind the scenes people when you talk about directors and writers. There's not a ton of progress to point to, I don't think, at a systemic level, which means that work has to be very intense. And one of my concerns is that in addition to kind of an invidious discrimination and racism, Hollywood, in my experience as an observer of it, never does a great job when executives are terrified about being fired. So anytime that you have economic distress in that industry, I think you have a greater than usual risk of, risk avoidance, not just risk avoidance, but risk choice, in that you want to take the same risks that anybody else in your position would take, because that way you don't get fired, you don't get in trouble. So I think they have a lot to worry about, and I think there's the potential for the economic situation around the pandemic to exacerbate the problems of discrimination and a lack of inclusivity. On the other hand, there are also a lot of people who are experimenting right now with different models of making, you know, what we might call content, as kind of icky of a word as that is, because it's so generic. When you talk about people who are working on making, you know, short films that they can make at home, or audio drama that they can make at home, my hope is that the upside of this may be that it will open new models for telling stories that might be cheaper, because they don't have to be, because people are kind of looking freshly at all the assumptions that we have about what a movie has to look like, what a piece of entertainment has to look like. Potentially those things could open up more, more pathways that might allow some of that concentrated power of Hollywood to be more widely dispersed. Because I don't think there's an answer to this that doesn't involve, and candidly, not to switch gears, but I felt the same way about the Me Too movement in Hollywood. I don't think there is an answer to this that's going to be thoroughly satisfying without simply reducing the concentration of power in individual, you know, a few executives at a few studios. So my hope is, you know, that this whole situation as a reset will have some positive effects in addition to the ones that worry me.
How does, Linda, the big, big, big release by Disney Plus, talk about a big Hollywood standard studio, how does the release of Hamilton over the 4th of July weekend by Disney Plus kind of fit into what we're talking about right now? This idea of, you know, big studios being risk averse, but also under pressure to, you know, display America in its full diversity. I would love your thoughts there, Linda, because this is just something everybody was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it's already been said, you know, the release of that film felt like a kind of cultural joint collaborative moment, right? Which is not to say everybody likes Hamilton, because everybody doesn't, but the conversation being really immersive and thorough, right? But I also think at the same time, like, if when you talk about individual creators who have been able to gather, to accumulate, and I don't mean this in a negative way at all, to accumulate power, you're talking about people like Lin-Manuel Miranda. I think my concern is, you know, there is still an opportunity for people who are at the kind of most powerful positions to get their stories told. The question is, you know, there's a wonderful piece in Vulture about Michaela Cole and her TV show, I May Destroy You, that talks about her, which is wonderful, by the way, it's on HBO. It talks about her effort to get ownership interest in her own TV show. And I think that's where my concern lies. There's always going to be a place, once you get to be Lin-Manuel Miranda, there's always going to be a place for you and for your work, I would hope. The question is, when Michaela Cole was coming to, you know, Netflix with this show and saying, I want a percentage, she got a lot of pushback for that, which according to the piece is part of why I said HBO. So the question is, what happens to these brilliant, brilliant creators who aren't established yet? So the question is not, what are the mega events going to be like Hamilton on Disney Plus? The question is, what's the pathway for creators who haven't had their Hamilton yet, right? So that's what my concern is.
And what pathways are available to them so they can have their Hamilton moment? That seems to be what you're saying,
absolutely.
Linda.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How many pathways are there? Yeah. Well, since we're talking about movies this hour in The Exchange, and since we just talked about Hamilton, let's just play a little bit from Hamilton. Again, this is a stage performance of the Broadway musical, which was made a film very well, I thought. I watched it over the 4th of July. For the audiences who haven't seen it yet, let's play a little bit from Hamilton.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore, and a Scotsman dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by Providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being the self-starter. By 14, they placed him in charge of a trading charter.
And every day while slaves were being slaughtered and carted away across the waves, he struggled and kept his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, borrow, or barter.
Then a hurricane came and devastation rained. Our man saw his future dripping down the drain. Put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain.
Again, that's a clip from Hamilton, which a lot of people watched over the 4th of July weekend, myself included. Coming up, we will talk more about some of the movies that you might see this summer and where you can see them, because as our guests are telling us, it's a little complicated, lots of different services. We'll also talk about when, how, where you might be able to see movies in an actual theater. Tell us if you're ready to go back to the movies. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the state of the movie industry in a weird summer where many people aren't going to the theater. We're finding out how those who make and present films are adapting and in some cases struggling. Let's hear from you. Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. What movies are you curious about this summer and how are you watching movies these days? Again, it's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. We're talking this hour with Angie Lane, Executive Director of Red River Theaters in Concord, Amy Diaz, editor and movie reviewer at the Hippo Press, and Linda Holmes, host of the NPR podcast Pop Culture Happy Hour. And all of you, here's a comment that came in from Corinna on Facebook. Corinna says, we like going to the movies every now and then if there's something we just have to see on the big screen. But, she says, I'll be honest, that's happening less and less often. Two reasons. One, it's too expensive. And two, we have invested in a ridiculous 65-inch TV at home. We have free popcorn and a private bathroom. The novelty is still there to go to the theater, but it's got to be worth it, Corinna says. So bring on the blockbuster action movies that demand the booming acoustics, and that's about all that will draw us to it. Sad, but that's the world we live in now. Adapt or go out of business. But before you get too depressed about this, Angie Lane, Corinna also says, the little community theaters will do well, though, I bet, once they're up and running. People love the indie films, and I love going to the local community theater by myself on a Sunday afternoon to watch something meaningful. Corinna, it's so good to hear from you. And Amy Diaz, to you first. What about the first part of her Facebook comment? You know, we've got free popcorn and a private bathroom and a 65-inch TV. We're staying at home. What do you think, Amy?
Well, you know, I can kind of understand that. One of the things that I've definitely noticed in the last few months, you know, I said I'm having a hard time keeping up with these movies, is that I feel like more of the smaller movies are more accessible to me. They're, you know, I'm hearing about them at the same time that I'm able to see them. And that's something that doesn't always happen. And I think that's something that, you know, I've kind of gotten used to. On the other hand, there have been some releases. One of them is Spike Lee's new movie, Da Five Bloods. This came out on Netflix. And while I was watching it, one of the things I was thinking is, I wish I could see this on a big screen. Some movies, I mean, I kind of feel like all movies benefit when all you're doing is watching the movie. And when, you know, in my case, my laundry, actually my unfolded clean laundry sits kind of right between me and the TV. And
I've really done that.
I look forward to not having like a chore, you know, kind of always interrupting me in my movie watching. But there are some movies like, you know, like this movie that I feel like really benefit from the bigness of the screen, from that's all you're seeing, that's all you're thinking about. And, you know, but it doesn't just have to be a big movie. One of the, I think the last movie I saw at Red River was The Assistant, which is kind of a smaller movie. It takes place in one day. It's people in an office place. One of the main characters you never actually see. It's kind of a, you know, a movie about this boss who is definitely an abusive boss. Is he also a predatory boss? It's very well done. And I'm so glad I got to see that again, where everything else is shut out. So while I understand the, you know, the ease of being able to watch things at home, I think there's still a place for that, you know, going out to see a movie and that's what you're doing. That's all you're doing. You leave your phone aside, you know, you're not doing anything else.
You know, we got an email from Sandy on the same line. Sandy says, going to the movie theater is one of the things I miss most. I will be staying away as long as this pandemic is going on. And Sandy, thank you for writing. And Angie, so what about Sandy's comments and Corinna's comments and just the broader idea of convincing people to come back?
It's so hard. I mean,
it's so complicated.
It is so complicated. And, you know, for us, you know, we closed our doors on March 17th. And, you know, we are just as anxious to reopen as our audiences, but we are definitely cognizant of the safety issues. And, you know, right now the state is requiring us to only be at 50% capacity and keeping people at 6 feet social distance. And so there's a lot of factors for us to think about before we reopen. And, you know, the biggest factor is that we just don't necessarily have any first run films coming out. And so we're trying to balance, you know, what do we do between now and when those films are available? I certainly don't blame anyone for being anxious about coming back into a movie theater. And, you know, for us as an independent theater, we, you know, obviously rely on those ticket sales, but we are also, you know, really supported by membership and just straight donations. And so we, you know, are really looking to our community now to you know, value what we bring while we're closed. But I do agree with that, the person that had written in, you know, we are different than the big box theaters. The experience I think that we provide is different. And so I think we, as far, or at least Red River is positioned to hopefully weather this storm in a way that the larger box theaters might not be able to. But that being said, it's still going to be a challenge to bridge this time that we're temporarily closed. And even when we do reopen, it's going to probably be limited at first, you know, maybe a few days, and then hopefully, you know, open a little more and a little more. All that being said, we just don't know what the future will bring as far as the pandemic and whether it will spread or crop up again. So we, you know, we're looking at all of those factors, but I do think that we are different than the larger box theaters. And don't get me wrong, like I love going to see a big summer blockbuster. I still, you know, go to the big chain theaters, but I love that people can come to our theater and you could come alone and then end up like talking to a stranger about the film in the lobby as you leave. So entranced. And I know you definitely, come on, you have to have had that experience, right? You see this movie and maybe you went there alone or you're with, you know, your friend or partner, and then you're walking out and you find yourself talking to like a perfect stranger because you're just so like mesmerized, or you just want to talk about that one thing in the movie. I don't know. It's different.
Well, so what you're saying, Angie, is I hear from people every single day is that we really won't have a full economic recovery until people feel fully safe, until there's a vaccine. You know, you might be open, but will they come? And Linda, I wonder how you're hearing this reflected around the country, you know, theaters making that decision. Should we open? Should we close? I think some states opened their theaters and then whoops, the cases spiked again and they had to pull back. So what are you hearing on this front, Linda?
Well, excuse me. I think that people have a variety of feelings about this because of where they live, because of how comfortable they feel, because of what their risk tolerance is, right? People have all different feelings about what they might do when theaters are open. I personally think one of the challenges is, what are the safety things that you might try to make a theater more safe, right? You would ask people to wear masks, but at the same time, a lot of theaters are heavily reliant on concessions for income. So asking people to wear masks has limited possibilities. I've seen sort of mock-ups of theaters with kind of plexiglass booths between the seats.
Oh, wow.
I feel like that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that anybody would actually do that, but I think, you know, when I see that, I think, well, that doesn't look like fun. You know, aside from the problems of sight lines and other things, that doesn't look like fun. And it has already been. And I think anybody who loves movie theaters as I do is aware that it's already been a challenge to persuade people like your commenter to continue to choose the theater experience over the home experience. And I would add to the comment that the commenter made about, you know, prices and other things. I honestly think the other thing is behavior of other people in theaters. I think I'm not talking about, you know, a raucous audience at the appropriate movie. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who just don't have any manners. So for all of these reasons, it's already been a struggle to persuade people to choose the theatrical experience. And when you have, you know, I don't know if I think a 65-inch television is ridiculous. I might have one.
You're a pop culture person, so.
If you do have one, right? You mentioned earlier the film The Old Guard, which is coming to Netflix, which I saw a screener of. If you've got a big TV, even with an action movie, when you're sprawled out on the couch, if you've got that big TV, that can be a pretty good experience. That movie, by the way, is terrific. And it is the first one that made me feel like I was seeing a big summer movie, even though I was at home. So it's complicated, right? I adore movie theaters. They are one of my sanctuaries. They are one of my sort of, you know, the pop culture version of your sacred places. I love the ones that are near me. I'm fortunate enough to live near some wonderful ones here in DC. But at the same time, I also think people have to think about what's the best way to curate a home viewing experience for myself, right? Whether it's for some people, they can afford to upgrade their home theater or whatever. But for other people, it's the realization that you've already talked about, like, oh, I actually want to rediscover the experience of putting my phone down and paying attention only to one thing. And I think that's a good skill to develop. If you say, I'm not going to be going to theaters for a while, then when I care about a movie, I want to give myself a focused moment to think about this film. And I think that can be very positive.
Not folding your laundry, Linda, like Amy Diaz?
Look, I do it, right? I do it. I rely on that time to get things done also. And again, that depends on the movie, right? If you're watching, you know, if I'm watching Sleepless in Seattle for the 456th time, I don't need to have my eyeballs on it at all times. If I'm watching The Old Guard, which is by the wonderful director, Gina Prince Bythewood, whose stuff I love, who made movies like Love and Basketball and Beyond the Lights, it has Charlize Theron and a bunch of actors I really admire. If you're seeing something like that, then yeah, no, commit yourself and say, I'm going to make this my own best experience.
Again, our phone number here in The Exchange for you to join us about your movie watching experience during this ongoing pandemic, 1-800-892-6477. Our email exchange at nhpr.org. Yes, it's the summer movie show today in the exchange, but the 2020 edition is pretty different from years past. Tell us how your summer movie watching is going and what questions do you have about new movies that you've heard about. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org or use Facebook like Corinna did earlier. Diane writes in on Facebook, public libraries are starting to open and are often a great place to borrow a copy of an Academy Award-winning film, a series, a family movie, or a classic. Diane, that's so true. My older boy a couple weeks ago was saying, you know, he wanted to watch some of the Rocky classics. And I was saying, what streaming service is that available on? And he said, Mom, just go to the library and get it. So good for him. Here's an email from James who says, yesterday I saw a Barnes in Meredith with a sign indicating that they were reopening soon. When I told my wife, she refused to consider it outright. James says, I wonder myself if people will follow safety guidelines. We're big fans of going out to see a movie, but not if it risks my health. So James, that's definitely a theme that we've been talking about today. I want to return all of you to the theme that we touched on a little bit earlier, how well the movie industry, large and small, is reflecting the strong demand for movies to better reflect the cultural diversity of America. And all of you had really interesting stuff to say there. And Amy Diaz, I wonder if there are any new movies this summer, and I'm using, you know, this summer, again, with air quotes on it, because who knows about these release dates, but are there any movies, Amy, that fit well, that do a good job of reflecting, you know, a diverse America and the experiences of, you know, non-white people beyond the sort of sidekick stereotype that Angie mentioned earlier? Go ahead, Amy.
Well, one I just saw this weekend is called Miss Juneteenth. This stars, I'm going to butcher her last name, but I think her name is Nicole Beharie. She was on Sleepy Hollow, which is how I know her, and I absolutely loved her. This is a story about a mom and her daughter, and she's trying to get her daughter to be in this Miss Juneteenth pageant, which she was in as a teen, and you can kind of see that for her, part of it is like, you know, making the better choices that she wished she had made. She wants her daughter to win this thing, to go to college, to have more opportunity. But then also it's this economic reality of if she wins this pageant, that's a free ride to college. And that's kind of the quickest way she can figure out how to do this. And I just love this story because it's a story about a woman, you know, working so hard for her daughter, but not quite sure of how to advocate for herself and maybe how to get what she wants or even know what she wants, which I feel like is such a motherhood thing, you know, where you feel stronger advocating for your children maybe than yourself. So that was a great movie. That one is available for rent or purchase, just sort of out in the world. Another one on Netflix, this is a documentary. It's called Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. I saw this one a couple of months ago. This is such a great movie. It looks at this camp that served kids who are, you know, kids and teenagers, like teenagers who are disabled back in the 60s and 70s. And it was this place where they just went to be themselves and to live life. And they had, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends. And they talk about, you know, the documentary features a lot of interviews with the campers now. And they talk about kind of what it felt like to just live life and see what this was like without some of the restrictions they had at home and how that spurred them on to activism as they got older and sort of helped them push laws that were kind of the precursors to the American with Disabilities Act. It is such a great movie. It was such a great, like, heartwarming documentary. And again, that one's available on Netflix.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're doing too, Amy, is when you talk about a movie, you know, these days you can't just say, and it'll be at your theater soon. You have to say it's on Netflix, it's on Amazon Prime, or, you know, Disney Plus or whatever. How about you, Angie? What other new movies are you hearing about that you feel are doing a good job reflecting America's diversity?
Oh, gosh. I am not prepared for this question. I'm trying to think. I mean, I myself have been watching a lot of Netflix, and, you know, recently, and it's not a movie, but it's that new series, Mindy Kaling, Never Have I Ever, which is, you know, young teenagers, but it's a super diverse cast of an Indian young woman and, like, existing in her you know, with her cultural barriers that she sees, but also just regular teenage things. And I watched it twice because I thought, oh my God, I'd never had anything like that growing up. And what I liked about it wasn't just about her Indian identity. It was also just about her regular life as a teenager. And maybe it's because I'm in the pandemic, but there's definitely points where I got teary-eyed just because I was so excited that there might be people watching it that see themselves in it and how important that is. And you know, it's an older film, but I just got a chance to watch The Hate U Give, and it's a little older, but it was really resonated with me as far as what's happening in our culture today. So, I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. About
no, that's okay. And I'm glad you mentioned older movies like The Hate U Give. That was a huge young adult book, I think 2 or 3 years ago, and made into a movie. So I actually did not know that was made into a movie. So, or maybe we had talked
really
about
good.
It. Yeah. Amy really Diaz, good. We probably talked about that years ago on one of our earlier summer movie shows. Linda, what about The Five Bloods by Spike Lee? There was a lot made about this, not only because it's made with, it's about four Black Vietnam War veterans, but also Spike Lee just said, you know, I'm releasing this on Netflix, I think. He just didn't even bother with the theaters. So what's sort of the lowdown on The Five Bloods, Linda?
I actually, believe it or not, I may have given bad information in preparation for this conversation. I haven't watched it yet because we sort of divvy up new stuff that's coming out among my
team. Sure, there's a lot.
For the podcast. Can I throw in one thing for the conversation that you just had, though?
Sure.
One thing that I would recommend people look for if you do have Netflix, there's a documentary that's coming out this week that's called Mucho Mucho Amor, and it's about the Puerto Rican astrologer Walter Mercado, who was, you know, incredibly, incredibly famous, had hundreds of millions of people watched him on television and listened to him on the radio, an absolute legend in a lot of households and little known in others. It's a really good documentary. He passed away in 2019, and we've already talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda in this discussion, but there's a wonderful sequence when Lin-Manuel Miranda goes to meet Walter Mercado and is just overcome with emotion because he grew up watching this guy. So if you're talking about something that might give you a little bit of insight into if you happen to be somebody who did not grow up in a Spanish-speaking household, insight into something you don't know a lot about, keep your eye out for stuff like that. And again, that's called Mucho Mucho Amor. And I'm not trying to change the subject away from Spike Lee. I just unfortunately cannot be that helpful.
That's okay. There's a lot out there, as Amy Diaz said earlier. So I watched the preview for this yesterday. I'm always interested in what Spike Lee is doing. I did think it was interesting that, you know, he's got this movie, just put it on Netflix. Let's play just a little bit from The Five Bloods. And again, this is a story of four Black Vietnam War veterans. They go back to Vietnam decades later to retrieve the remains of their fallen squad leader, Stormin Norman, as well as, here's another twist, a gold fortune that they buried there way back when they were fighting the war. And in this clip, we're going to hear one character named Paul has just suffered sort of what seems to be a little PTSD.
I see ghosts, y'all. I see ghosts.
What happens to all of us, man?
Have you seen him too?
Yeah.
Dad come to you at night. Storm and Norm come to me damn near every night. Now he talked to you like he talked to me.
Come on.
I don't think so.
Come on.
Again, that's a clip from Spike Lee's To Five Bloods, released on Netflix. Coming up, we will talk about a couple more of the summer movies that our guests have already seen or are looking forward to seeing. And we'll give a little preview of the Oscars. They've been pushed back, if you haven't heard, so we'll talk about that as well. Keep those emails coming. It's great to hear from you. exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what's new on the big screen in the summer of 2020?
As we're hearing, it's complicated with movie production studios trying to figure out a new normal and brick and mortar theaters trying to float. Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you this hour. Join us with your comments and questions about the movies that you've been watching or that you, or just your thoughts on what it'll take to get you back into a seat at the theater. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Angie, Amy, and Linda, we talked earlier about, you know, your classic summer movie. I think, Amy, you always call it a big blow-up popcorn movie where you jump out of your seat and maybe you lose a little popcorn. I'm not, to be honest, a huge fan of those sort of explosion-type movies, but I did watch a clip that I want to play of a sort of thriller, spy, excitement movie that did look interesting to me. It's called Tenet. I want to play a little bit, and then maybe Amy Diaz, get your thoughts on it. So here's a little movie, a little trailer from the movie Tenet.
All I have for you is a word. It'll open the right doors, some of the wrong ones, too. Use it carefully.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
I'm not saying Armageddon here.
No. Something worse.
Okay, so that's a clip from the movie Tenet. And Amy Diaz, in a way, this seems to fit the sort of classic summer movie. You know, there's like bad Russian guys and sort of classy, secretive British people. But two things. One is it's kind of interesting. It's a thriller and a spy movie and he can bend time. So that's interesting. But the other thing is the lead character is a black man and he's not an amusing sidekick and he's not a former slave. You know, he's just a guy doing a job. So I just would love your thoughts on just what this movie is trying to do.
I'm really excited for this movie. So this is from Christopher Nolan and that trailer and that kind of like timey-wimey and stuff, you know, there isn't a lot of plot description out there for this movie. I think they want to keep it a little bit under wraps, kind of like Inception. So that is John David Washington is the lead. It also Robert Pattinson and Kenneth Branagh is in it. And this is the movie that is like the bellwether movie now. It keeps getting pushed back. It was in June and then it was July and now it's in the middle of August. I think it's on like a Wednesday, August 12th or something like that. And this will be the movie, you know, does a big movie open wide? Are people going to turn out to see it? I definitely think this is the kind of movie that people turn out to see because it is a big movie from a well-liked director who does really interesting stuff. And while it's not a Marvel movie, you know, it is maybe action-y, or it's, you know, there's a thriller aspect and an action aspect. So I'm really excited for it. And I really hope it actually does come out in August, but we'll see. I wonder if, you know, some theaters are still closed. Can a movie this big come out? Does it need to wait until it has at least the potential for a wider audience?
Yeah, it's one of those movies that really kind of does need the big screen because there's a lot of big scenes. At one point, there's an airplane that, you know, crashes into a building and so forth. Christopher Nolan, he directed Dunkirk, right, Amy? So, you know, some good chops there. Yeah. So
yeah.
Another movie that has gotten a lot of play, and it seems like there's a couple World War II movies this year. Resistance is one. Greyhound is another. And I wonder what they're going to do with Greyhound as well, because this is another sort of big splashy movie. I don't know if it would work on my small TV. I don't have 65 inches yet. Greyhound centers on an Allied convoy in the Atlantic Ocean during World War II, and the convoy is pursued by German U-boats, leading to a complex naval battle. Let's listen to a little bit of this movie's trailer, where we learn how much the lead character, Tom Hanks, we learn how much, or actually how little, experience he has.
Congratulations on your first command at last.
I'll always be looking for you, Evie. Even if I'm 1,000 miles away.
Air escort to Greyhound. You will now be out of range of air cover for the next 5 days. How many crossings does this make?
This was my first.
I got some.
Most likely a U-boat.
He's trying to slip under us! Fire!
Again, that's a clip from the movie Greyhound. And of course, you couldn't see it on the radio, but in the trailer, when Tom Hanks says, "This is my first crossing," you can see the men under him kind of all look at each other and go, "Oh dear." So, Linda, how are studios, theaters going to decide what to do with big, splashy movies, pun intended, like Greyhound?
Great question. I don't know. I think what's going to happen is there are going to be a couple that are going to be sort of canary in the coal mine sort of examples. I think they're going to see what happens. They're going to see what happens with the ones that they release at home, right? Is there a model under which they can make a reasonable amount of money on movies at home? Because they've been very, I haven't seen a lot of numbers about like, what kind of money are they making on the things that they have released so far that they've chosen to send to video? And we're just starting to get, I think, the bigger releases. I agree that this weekend with Palm Springs, which if I recall correctly, had a huge sale at Sundance, and also Old Guard and some of these other things, they're going to start to see whether they can make money doing them at home. I think that'll be one data point. And then at some point, they're going to open theaters somewhere and they're going to see whether people will show up. And I think those two things, once that data is in, what's the upside of just going ahead and releasing it at home? What's the upside of waiting and trying to put it in the theater? And option three, what's the option of just continuing to indefinitely into the future say, we're not ready to release Tenet now because we don't think enough people are going to come see it in theaters. But we're also not ready to release it at home because we don't think that it does the film justice. So we're just going to indefinitely put it off. And I think they're going to look at the money candidly and just see what seems like it makes the most sense. I think they're going to wind up with no good options. And then, of course, you're going to have the issue of what happens when we run out of stuff that already exists, was already made, was already ready to go. And then you run into, when does production ever restart in earnest? And I don't know the answer to that either.
Right. So, Angie, at least the production studios have some options in terms of release, releasing in theaters, releasing it at home, choosing the platform, choosing to hold off. I mean, what options do you have, Angie, these days? It seems like go ahead.
We're in a very similar boat. I mean, although we're not in the same, we don't get the same movies that the box theaters get, we are still using that as a indicator to when we might be able to get first run films. And so, when Tenet got pushed back, it was an indicator to us that our other films that we were expecting are going to get pushed back. So, for us, we're kind of just, not holding our breath, because that would be horrible because we'd be holding our breath forever. But we're just, we're seeing all those release dates push back. And, for now, we are working with distributors to do streaming options. It's really an engagement opportunity for us, for our community, and not necessarily in any way a financial replacement for people actually coming to the theater. And of course, it's just not sustainable. And so we are looking at, distributors pushing back dates or going direct to video. And so we are just waiting, like the other theaters are waiting. And it's hard. It's hard to see those dates keep getting pushed back because,
right.
Like Linda said, it's about the money at this point. Like where, are they going to be able to get the return on the investment? And we're not immune to that either.
So, Angie, what does that mean for you, though? I mean, pushing the release date back, deciding to release on video, if they, unfortunately, this pandemic seems to be not going away anytime soon, especially with the recent spikes in, some southern and western states. So, Angie, if more production companies decide to just, quote unquote, release on video, what does that mean for you and your financial model, which kind of relies on people actually sitting in seats?
I know. It's like when you're closed, it's hard to sell tickets to a movie.
Right.
So yeah, no, in reality, you know, we are weighing the options of playing some older titles, maybe even titles that we were playing or about to play. And I think Amy had mentioned First Cow, and that was something we were, you know, just about to play. And we, you know, our community has given us feedback. They do want to see it on the big screen. And so we do have options to maybe show some older titles or show some, like, you know, old classics or new classics, which, as you can see around different theaters in the state, are kind of popping up with, like, Jaws or Goonies, and that's certainly an option for us. But still, there, it's not necessarily a replacement financially for being able to show those first run films. So yeah, we're taking it day by day and week by week. And, you know, I have a board, we're a nonprofit, we're really looking at it as a long game. And, you know, we have intentions that we will be here on the other side.
Well, and you do have, just to let the audience know, on your website, you do have the capability for people to watch movies via Red River to kind of pay a little bit there. So that's one way that you're kind of tapping into that. And I want to let listeners know that all the movies that we mentioned this hour will be on our website a little bit later. So check out our website a little bit after the show, and we'll put some of the movies that we talked about today if you heard it and thought, oh, I'm curious about that one, I'd like to see it. For now, though, I'll wrap it up. And Linda, it was really great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
That's Linda Holmes, host of Pop Culture Happy Hour, a podcast from NPR. Amy Diaz, always great to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Amy Diaz, editor and movie reviewer at the Hippo Press. And Angie Lane, good luck, and I really appreciate you being with us this hour.
Thank you.
That's Angie Lane, executive director of Red River Theaters, an independent movie theater in Concord. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.